Attention, attention. You are listening to a pre-recorded episode of The Curious Realm. Curious Realm is busy traveling the vast void of time and space to find the best paradigm-changing content the universe has to offer. Enjoy the following transmission, and remember, stay curious, curious. Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. Christopher Lynch sent me these amazing new gummies that they have, folks. Fantastic CBD products there. Feel free to stop on by. TrueHempScience.com is the website. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart. I have been using True Hemp Science for probably going on close to 5 years now. And hands down the best. And not that I haven't tried other CBDs, not that I don't pick some up whenever I'm on the road, stuff like that. I always come home to True Hemp Science. They are hands down the best that I have found. True terpene profiles to all of their products. Their new gummies are fantastic. Stop on by and check them out, folks. That is TrueHempScience.com. Code is Curious7 to save 7% off your entire cart. While you are online checking things out, of course, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com/store. That is where you can find the books of our guest in this segment, the amazing Keith Seeland. He is the author of The Humaniverse Guide, as well as The Humaniverse Guide to First Contact with E.T. We have had him on before talking about petroglyphs, talking about contact and communication with E.T. What will happen? What is the fate of that with humanity? Keith is getting ready to go out on the road to a couple of ancient sites, and we're going to be talking with him tonight about the bridges from the past to the present, the many ways that ancient cultures pass into the modern realm, and the many ways that these ancient cultures actively knew each other across the globe and had not just shared knowledge, but almost shared experience. Welcome back to the show, Keith. How you doing, man?
Good. Great, Chris. Thanks. We're just as we get into our spring weather and season, just starting to crank up the activity for both research and the speaking lecture tour.
Well, before we get going, how has the research been going with the petroglyphs, everything else out in the field?
Good. I've started, as I do live in the U.S., I've started, and this is basically going to be a lifelong research project, starting with Native America and, the richest single geography aspect, lies in the Southwest. So I spent a lot of time the last couple of years out in various fields in the Southwest, United States. Collecting data, basically, old glyphs and, from many, many ancient cultures dating back, archaic periods, which, generally go back about 8,000 or more years. So, that thrust of research, where I started and, collecting data and done some research with the efforts of trying to maybe start decoding a little bit of the stories and communication that our indigenous Native Americans left for us. But coming up this year, just in a few short weeks, I'll be starting a new chapter, an expansion on the study, which will take me into Egypt, the pyramids, hieroglyphs, and then later on in the summer to ancient Turkey, Göbekli Tepe, Karahan Tepe, Cappadocia, and the ancient city of Troy also. And then from there, that chapter is going to move into a worldwide expansion of the ancient cultures, how they communicated with each other. Well, yes, with each other amongst intra tribes, so to speak, and then the potentials for the our ancient cultures to have been able to travel overseas to visit other cultures, in which you know, we've uncovered some evidence. And as time goes on, as you know, the nature of archaeology findings and discoveries, there will be much, much more to be discovered in the future. That's probably the most exciting part of the archaeology profession, is what lays yet to be discovered.
Well, and, you know, as we were discussing before we hit record, Keith, the fact that there is so much out there that has been literal myth to humanity, and until literally the last burgeoning part of human technology. I just had up on screen, you were talking about going to Troy, and yeah, like until 1870, like I read the accounts of Troy and the Odyssey, the Iliad, all that in college, and yeah, that comes from ancient Greece. Those are from Homer, you know. So they've been talking about Troy and considering it myth until almost the 1900s, really the beginnings of archaeology as we know it. And now, like you said, it's a UNESCO heritage site now. That place was myth just over 100 years ago.
Yeah, till so recent. And for anyone, Chris, that does any studying of the Greek civilization, which is generally agreed upon the Western, how I put this, the Western way of life that we adopted, where was its provenance? Well, it's generally considered ancient Greece.
Yeah.
So if any student can pick up in studying the timeline, they'll get the feel that the protocol, the dimensions, the evolution of our ancestors who worshipped multiple deities. They were very interested in the sky, the heavens, so to speak, and whatnot. We consider that as religion. Okay. Mythology was the creations of looking up and seeing constellations and zodiac in the sky and fashioning stories from them.
Yeah.
Hence mythology, which then begot a study of either astronomy, the beginnings of a little bit of science, but a lot of philosophy thrown in there.
Yeah.
And then begets science and engineering and whatnot. So those professions kind of in the timeline were created from each other. And that's the feel that a person would get from, you know, studying ancient Greece. So it's mythology is more on the dimension towards religion or
absolutely
faith. Or non-empirical. I mean, the antithesis of empirical in nature. Well, Troy was discovered. I mean, it's real.
Yeah.
They've only uncovered a little percentage of it, but there's probably going to be so much to be found from there that puts a whole new, maybe ultimate perspective on our mindset of whether we should still consider this mythology or to say, hey, it's real. These things happen. So what else is going on there?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even having the open mind to consider the fact that as we've discussed with numerous guests, including Jared Murphy, humanity has been here numerous times. Society and science and culture, society has been here and existed and gone away numerous times. The technology comes and goes so rapidly. Even right now in our society, Keith, if you were to take a 3-foot beam of wood around a craftsman and ask them to make you a spiral pillar, have fun with that. You know, you were talking about how your father flew a bomber in World War II. Like your grandfather or your father probably could have had a really good chance of finding a dude to hand carve them a spiral pillar out of a chunk of wood. You know, we have lost those master craftsmen. We don't have them in that right anymore. We have technology that does that. Now, the real question is, once the technology stops working, where do we go then? I mean, like I told you before, the example I give is an SD card. I can hold a ton of the knowledge vault on an SD card, go bury it in the sand, and 100 years from now, somebody finds it. Contains tons of invaluable knowledge, you know, circuit diagrams, all kinds of things to make technology. How do you recover it? Once the knowledge of how to recover it goes away, how to access it, once the people with that knowledge pass and don't pass it down, we're in a bit of a quandary. Technologically, as a society, you know, and once again, there have been numerous times to think that, you know, we didn't cross the oceans until Magellan is a little silly. When we know that the Phoenicians were amazing water pilots, they did amazing things with rowboats, sailboats, things like that. It's pretty remarkable.
Oh yeah, and I mean there's so many points to be made from that. For example, the search for Atlantis. I mean, yep. Our current studies have researchers. I'm sure they're going where the government grant money is, but they're searching probably 3/4 of the way around the world. That their hypothesis is that Atlantis was from here. But yet the dichotomy is that we still maintain that, well, our ancient civilizations were not able to travel to each other, to visit, to trade or share knowledge or whatever. But, that's an example. And then another more concrete one, literally in a lot of ways is, for example, the pyramids. I mean, the conceptualizations, the ancient civilizations, which were supposed to have been disparate and not able to travel to see each other, yet the manifestations of our conceptualizations resulted in pyramids that exist all over the world. Undeniable, you can't wish them away or whatever. Stories of, we were just talking about a little while ago about ancient Egypt princes who were buried in Australia. I mean, they trekked, as far away, and let me see, is my math 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 miles away over open ocean. But yet our thought process and our conclusions from our professional departments recognize and assert that they weren't able to travel. I guess, Chris, and this is an example in a big way, we don't give our ancient civilizations enough credit for
exactly
the intelligence, the acumen, the adaptiveness to be able to live and the ingenuity. Thrive and survive and evolve. Yes.
The ingenuity, and when you think about it, like, feel free to go back to ancient Greece, see some of the work of Archimedes, we had incredible feats of engineering.
The Antikythera
Leonardo had automatons.
Yep. The helicopters, he had things that were circuit boards that were just, we got into production only a couple of generations ago.
It's pretty wild to see some of, once again, the technologies that we have had. And that's why Jared Murphy's book is called, It's Not Aliens, Worse, It's Us. because mm-hmm. It seems like these are miraculous technologies, things like that. No, they are just not lost knowledge is what they are. And I mean, even to take that a step further, Keith, like right now, quantum physics, the concept of particle entanglement, things like that. These are quite literally the roots of ESP. These are the roots of telekinesis, being able to move things with your mind, being able to influence things at a distance, being able to have knowledge of things without physically being there, remote viewing, that kind of stuff. All possible. All active, not even scientific quote quandaries, but scientific realms of research. Like remote viewing is quantifiable. It's pretty wild. And these are all things that ancient civilizations believed in, they revered, they looked at, and things that we look at and are just now coming back to terms with as a humanity.
Oh yeah, and so much of this, I'm going to give you another example of the problems that exist when our species creates knowledge and then it is lost for centuries or millennia. I'll take in just a few weeks, I'll be landing in Cairo, so I'll be touring the pyramids, and you get talking about hieroglyphs and the history. And tying it into this conversation to where right around Roman and Jesus Christ time was when hieroglyphs got so out of favor that it was exterminated as a language and as a linguistic communication source. It was exterminated by society then, lost forever, or for at least 1800 years until the Rosetta Stone was discovered. And then it took many decades after that to be able to lay the groundwork for being able to decipher some of the ancient Egyptian language. And we're still doing a ton of that today and will for the future. But in that, uncovering so many more secrets about how the advanced Egyptian, how I put this, civilization, some of their biology, their methods for mummification, how they built the pyramids, what the pyramids were for, at least in Egypt, yeah, are all unanswered. And maybe a lot of the answers will lay within the language, the hieroglyphs, and the communications that they left. But again, that just goes back to the example where the society ruling back then wanted to exterminate hieroglyphs, and they did, and they got lost to time for 1800 years.
Yeah, until the finding of the Rosetta Stone. It's remarkable. And once again, the tons of writing. It's not like there were scant amounts of hieroglyphs around. You know, it's not like the Dead Sea Scrolls where we found some, you know, hieroglyphs were rampant. They were everywhere. They were all over the place. They built something in honor of somebody. It was covered in hieroglyphs, you know. So the fact that active language was lost is pretty incredible.
And it was due, Chris, as today. the prevailing society of now, maybe let me, we'll compare and contrast a little bit. Today, what we're faced with is an explosion of, and this is not just industrial revolution. This is post that. This is information revolution and, yep. Quantum. I'll just say that. We're faced with a problem. I was at, recently Flagstaff Observatory. I'm a member of that. And they had a meet an astronomer night. And I, as an aside, Chris, I'll mention to you something about some equipment that I saw there, but not to divert. I asked the question, the astronomer, she was talking about, Deirdre was talking about storage, medium, modality, things like that.
Yeah.
And she mentioned floppy disks and everything. And I smiled and I asked her, what's going to happen in 100 years? With our knowledge, you've spent your whole career in astronomy. How is this going to be able to be translated? I says, you probably remember with your 40 years, you probably go back to the computer languages of Fortran, COBOL, and DOS. You know, and she laughs. She goes, exactly. I says, what's going to happen in 100 years?
Yeah.
When they look back. And they can't translate your data, your collection of information from now. And she says that's exactly, you know, a big problem.
Yeah.
What's you know, what's going to happen? Are we going to lose that knowledge?
Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. If because it's great to digitize it all. It's fantastic. But what do you do with the Digital Library of Congress? How do you keep it powered? How do you keep the data there? I'd love to say that this SD card is not corruptible. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, a hard drive is deprecable. You know, data decays over time.
And is it universally accessible?
That's it.
What I mean by that is that we have so many other operating systems. There's Windows, there's Linux, there's all different ways to be able to turn the computer on and boot it up and get it working.
Yeah, you didn't have to boot up the Rosetta Stone. You just had to know one language.
It was there, and thankfully it was translated for us, and there were some pieces missing from very important aspects of it, but you know, still even then. So our ancients, there's another advantage that they had is that, you know, ancient Egypt or Mayan or Native America. I mean, I've toured glyphs out in Utah and Arizona that are 8,000 years old. The Great Gallery and the Sago Canyon and that. And it's these things were left there. But how do you determine what they were trying to say? What stories were they trying to tell? And what technology were they trying to tell us that they had back then?
Well, and I mean that's just it. Much like any piece of art on a wall, what were they trying to convey?
Yeah, and I don't say art.
No. And we've definitely had that discussion that this is not art. Art typically wall art, rock art, things like that you see is like. People hunting, that kind of stuff. People hunting, gathering, taking part in community. This is far different. These are depictions of what they consider to be their gods, what they consider to be star people, people who brought knowledge to humanity.
Yep, exactly. Ancient Sumeria.
Yeah.
The texts there, you just go all the ancient civilizations that had their own, languages, which we do today, but on the larger levels, the lowest common denominator with all of those, peoples is that they were human.
Yeah.
They were and are hardwired as we are today. We're not that much different from them. And they all thought on the highest levels in the same ways.
Yes.
And developing their linguistics and their forms of communicating their thoughts.
Well,
and their knowledge to each other. There's a lot of universals. There's some divergences, but they're all human beings.
Even the tradition of communicating through symbol, whether you're talking runes, something like that, hieroglyph, what have you, a symbol representing words, that concept.
Ideographic or phonetic.
Yeah, precisely. And even the idea of, even if you're going from Norse to Native American to Egyptian, these were concepts and teachings that were passed down. Not everybody knew how to read. Not everybody knew how to write. Not everybody, the average person walking down the street couldn't read the hieroglyphics. You know, that was reserved for high priests. That was reserved for royalty, that kind of stuff. But what could be passed on is the story of what that hieroglyphic panel is about and what that story meant to the people, how it moved people. And whether you're talking ancient Egypt, whether you're talking sacred rock drawings in of the Aboriginal people in Australia, or the panels that you went out and captured in the American Southwest, they all have the same high concept, and they all have the same tradition of an oral passing down of a tradition and a story. Oral doesn't get lost in a fire. Like the Library of Alexandria, things like that.
Yes. So sad.
It's but a reality that we have to deal with as a humanity. So the more we can pass it down, that idea of master craftsman to apprentice, the better off we are.
Yeah. Yes, we need all of those forms of communication. We have needed them. We do need them. We continue to need them. And as we evolve, we're going to continue to need them. The high priests or the shamans or those royalties of the various civilizations, they were the publishers of. They were like the publishing houses, the newspapers, so to speak, or the book publishing houses. They disseminated the information. What was left for us was not really so much the mundane day-to-day type of existence. It was the special events in that particular culture, whether it was a war, unfortunately, humans have that characteristic also, but and have had throughout history and before history, pre-recorded, but great stories of war, conquest of or stories of the birth of new royal offspring, new kings or new rulers. Sometimes directional stories, especially in Native America, glyphs were left for travelers if they needed to find a source of sustenance, water and or food, biological. So some glyphs were left for there, and some were, stories were written depicting events with the Kachina, the Indigos, the Star People, and I'll give you a universal amongst all disparate, supposedly disparate civilizations. One concept is can be described as the moral code for that particular culture, the Tree of Life, the Tree of Knowledge. Each of the cultures, and I'm going to be studying the Egyptian tree coming up in a few weeks, I've had some exposure in Native America, and I've discovered glyphs that there have been depictions of the Tree of Life. So, again, all these different cultures have this abstract concept in existence, a compass, a way to live, a way to conduct their lives successfully and happily. They've all came up. The golden rule, another moral standard, so to speak. Yeah. Universal stories of the Great Flood. I mean, boy, there's more and more evidence coming down that there was a Great Flood. So
that there was a shared cataclysm across the globe. Yeah.
So all of these stories in translation were meant just as one way. The depictions left on the rock writings, just one way of communication. But as you mentioned, and I entirely agree, they had we call it folklore, the stories that they told, the verbal communications, and all of the languages, Sumerian, hieroglyph, Aborigine, Native American, they all have Norse. They all have very rich oral traditions also, which can't be discounted. It may not be as empirical as some scientific endeavors might want to put a spin on it, but you can't dismiss it completely.
Well, it's harder to dismiss because those are unbroken traditions. They are stories that are unchanged for generations, you know, and as opposed to technology that changes, you know, prime example is feel free to take a look at English and some of the words just in our lifetime, Keith, that mean eight different things that they did not a decade ago, you know, and that's a prime example of how language changes, how accents end up on words, how umlauts are created, all kinds of things that these languages change. And the way that they are written and represented change over time. However, the cultural stories behind them that motivate them do not.
Yep. It's almost like I like to characterize it as each generation wants to imprint its own temporal. Sure. Marking its own temporal territory, so to speak, or putting its own temporal stamp on a particular, whether it's a particular word definition or a definition of a word or whatever. And so often the results are bastardizations.
Yeah.
In some ways. I don't know how much productivity there is or how much detraction.
Prime example that I give regularly on the show, and this is nothing to discredit the good work done by missionaries over a couple thousand years almost. However, when you're talking about the story of Beowulf and other such stories that come from an oral tradition, because they didn't really write down a whole lot of stories, they were told. So when you're talking about a monk transcribing a story, you're bound to get some translation in there. You're bound to get some translation loss in there as well. And you're also bound to maybe get some interpretation of symbolism that may not be the original intent. You know?
Yeah.
And this is because of translation. Now, the original story that monk heard around a mead hall, totally different. Because that was an unbroken oral tradition of a story with a moral compass attached to it, you know? That's a prime example of how one story can be the same way until the point of translation, until the technology literally meets it, and then it's changed.
And then that's exactly right. Yeah, that's where it's modified, shaped, altered, often irreparably, and that's part of the problem, part of the difficulty in its descendants, aka us, trying to decipher, so to speak, decode decipher in many ways what they were really, really trying to say. You have to place yourself. That's one of the very most important aspects of, for instance, going into a petroglyph field. I mean, as a tourist, you can go in there and you can say, oh, look at the pretty art or whatever. Well, it's not art. But then you have to remember, too, what time you're talking about a period of existence for Native America in that particular region that spans most often, in many cases, thousands of years. So you have to kind of learn as much as you can, or place yourself temporally within the situation in situ, so to speak, to be able to get a feel. It's not in a lot of ways an open mind. You have to use the right side of your brain also. You can't just be able to collect data, so to speak, and be able to determine, answer your hypothesis, get to a theory, and then replicate it, prove it, or whatever. You got to use the other side of your brain a little bit, because there's a temporal aspect to a lot of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
That's inherent within that is the culture that was living back then, their environment, and their backdrop, so to speak.
And we are, culturally right now, Keith, we were just having this conversation with Gretchen Cornwall the other day. We are at a roiling point, man. Like, we are beyond the point of boiling the frog. We are at a straight up crawfish boil now, and people are just throwing stuff into the pot, brother. And it's wild to see the mentality of some of the hysteria going on. I guess what I'm getting at is the danger of loss of knowledge, the danger of loss of open mind, open heart, open concept. I see a lot of things about book bannings right now, and that disturbs me. That disturbs me. Books are knowledge.
Agenda-based.
Books are only keys to doors. That's all they are, and you have to be, once again, like you were just saying, willing to explore, willing to hear the other option. Without hearing the other option, we've literally removed America. We've removed, once you remove choice, you've removed America. So by default, whenever you ban a book, you're removing America. And it's dangerous. Like, we're literally three steps away from putting them in a pile in the middle of a public square and lighting them on fire, and that's a dangerous point to be at as a society, because that means we are willing to get rid of knowledge that we do not agree with.
And that's the sad part of
it. That's dangerous.
Who's printing up the T-shirts that have on them the number 451 degrees Fahrenheit on it, so to speak?
Once again, wars have existed throughout the history of mankind, and throughout the prehistory of mankind, and history of mankind. We have pointed to people on the other side of the trees and said, stay away from them because of this crazy reason. It's scary. It's scary because what knowledge are we willing to get rid of? What knowledge might we lose that is so intrinsic later?
It's part of our in the moment psychology or manifest. Everything is short term, is immediate.
Yep.
Whatever the causes of it, we've let them infect or infiltrate or come into our lives, so to speak. We're we're moving away from more and more anything to do with a long-term perspective, such as our future generations and, you know, what are our policies and agenda-based decisions made today going to, we've lost all train of thought about wanting to care about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
It's all the immediate.
Well, and granted, yes. And there is some, I guess, thought to the future whenever you look at green agendas, things like that. And the idea of we need to do something now. However, when you're talking about, yes, taking it back to that Native American five generation concept, you know, like we will make no decision for the community that does not behoove us for five generations. You know, that if it's not good for five generations of us, it's not a decision we should make. Because yes, we're planning on the temporal, not on the long play decision of our society, you know? And we, once again, in our race for technological dominance and our race for want, we're up against it. Even right now with ChatGPT and AI and things like that, Keith, it's pretty remarkable.
But yeah, and yet though, Chris, as we invent these new technologies, answering one question but creating three others, one of them often being, have we learned, have we taken the time and effort to learn how to most effectively use the technology, the new one we just created, before we invent the next few?
Yeah.
And I mean, so often in my travels, in ufology travels, I've talked to experiencers, and they say that their meetings with ET, the message gets hammered home to them hard, long, and clear: scale back the runaway technology. You're it's not going to work for you in the way that you're trying to evolve it.
Yeah.
Learn how to use it.
Yep.
Before you move on.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, even right now, prime example, I just popped up the article that came out a little while ago about the artist who refused his major award. This photographer won an amazing award for his photograph of two women. He refused his award and told the panel, "Sorry, I created that with AI." And that was kind of his lesson of beware the runaway technology, you know, because like I just won a photography contest with this and I didn't do anything, you know.
All pixels.
It's pretty remarkable what we are capable of and what we are able to do. The question, once again, just to loop this conversation back home, Keith, is how do we assure the fact we're able to keep doing it? How do we assure the fact that this technology passes forward and doesn't go past dated? How do we make sure that we are future compatible so that we do not befall the, what were the obelisks really for? You know, what kind of data can we hold in a quartz crystal? You know, it's
and so often knowledge is got its own time stamp of, how will I put this, not authenticity, but reality, so to speak. And what I mean by that is that when there's a story created by any of our ancients, and this is a universal aspect amongst them also, they were publishing their writings upon what they saw. I won't go off too much on this, but those that say that the shamans in Native America, all of these petroglyphs were pipe dreams and they were chemical manifestations and whatnot, and I vehemently disagree with that, in that they were just transliterating what they saw.
Yeah.
In reality. So you take the reality of the in situ, the time and the situation that the native, the indigenous were actually in at that time, defines the stories that they told. The Bible is another great example of how it was written, and then all of the modifications that were made and published for the thousands of years since then. You know, you pick up a today's version of the Bible, how much different is it from the original one that was written?
Oh, vastly, vastly. And not just that, which version of the Bible?
You know, exactly.
Cause
agenda based.
Precisely. Cause yes, the Bible was called together by the Council of Nicaea to basically get the brand right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, the King James Version, before the King James Version, Martin Luther changed it again. Then the King James Version changed later because, you know, he was done with the whole church, so he needed his own Bible. And that removed even more books, you know. But there's only 2-3 actual versions of the Bible out there that use the original Hebrew for the Old Testament. And use the Coptic Greek and things like that for and Assyrian for the New Testament. Everything else comes from Latin and Greek translation, and nothing was written in Latin or Greek. It was Aramaic, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's like somebody telling you a Spanish joke in Korean and then translating it into English. You may lose a thing or two.
So today, at least anyways, if in the last 100, maybe 200 years, we've had the chance to use our technology to digitize our knowledge, you know, going back, and we'll go back a few hundred years or whatever, will we be able to, one, have the instrumentation 100 years from now with which to access the medium that we are using today, which presents one problem, but then also being able to fully trust our interpretation of that knowledge that was created and became reality 100, 200, 300 years ago?
Yeah.
Or did we spin our own agenda onto it? And therefore bias it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good point.
Well, I mean, while you were talking about that, the article that I had up was from ZME Science talking about this small quartz disc can store 360 terabytes of data forever. And talking literally about how moving drives and SSD drives, you'll lose data eventually. But that chunk of quartz, you could store terabytes in a small wafer of quartz for eternity. And this is a concept that's been talked about by folks that, you know, ascribe to the Lemurian society concept, the concept of Atlantis, ancient Egypt, all kinds of things that, and even the crystal skulls that they were programmed with data of ancient civilizations. And when you're talking Lemurian quartz record keepers, things like that, that these things actively hold the knowledge of former civilizations. So sure, you could say it's crazy. We can store data on it. We can store data on a literal slice of quartz. So no real difference.
Which is a great advancement in and of itself, but yet then will we be able to
reach right back to the ancient technology? Once again, I mean, all it did was come full circle. But once again, the crystal that I'm holding in my hand, how do I access the knowledge that's held inside of it? Like you're saying, maybe, with the quartz wafer, 1,000 years from now, I hope we have the way to access it. Not saying that ancient civilizations couldn't put it inside of a crystal, but not everybody has the knowledge to be able to access that data.
And maybe that's our mistake as a species, in that we keep repeating.
Yeah.
In that, as we make these discoveries, as we create this technology, and maybe I'll say so, the instrumentation, the engineering, yeah, to be able to do measurements and whatever, we don't think far enough ahead to be able to make and present this information and this knowledge accessible for, yeah, our future generations. Maybe we just keep making that same mistake.
Yeah. Well, surely 200 years from now, Keith, we will have high priests, and these high priests will know the vibration to sing at to release this information, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That information that's will be passed down from generation to generation.
Yep. You know full well, Chris, we're across the precipice.
EMF, oh God, yeah,
knowledge explosion. We're over the fence.
Yeah.
We're into the explosion of knowledge about EMF, that is going to,
it is,
gosh,
it's changing everything, Keith. And like, so I said, something is roiling to the surface technologically in our society right now. As Art Bell used to put it, the quickening, except that was 20 years ago when he talked about the quickening. Now, like, his eyes would be the size of his head now to see the way things, mm-hmm, are in our society, the way things are technologically, everything else. I can't wait to see where we go as a humanity. But at the same time, as we've discussed privately and on this show, Keith, we need to caveat where we're going as a humanity as we go there. And we need to make sure that we are doing things responsibly and properly.
Tree of life, tree of knowledge.
Yeah.
I'll just throw that out there.
I want to thank you for coming back on the show, discussing this stuff. It's great to talk with people like you, Keith, that are actively out in the field doing this research. It's really, really great. When can we look for your book on the petroglyphs, things like that?
It's been a couple. I just let me see. Will ET Talk With Us? That just came out a couple of months ago. So, a new chapter, as I said, has begun. Will begin. I'll be trekking through Egypt, and then Turkey, putting an international flavor. And that's what I hope to do, is to circle some of the fine points that we just talked about in trying to impress upon our society, our public, and help for me to educate them, that we can't forget the stories and the lessons from our ancients. We all thought alike. We all do think alike. Here's their stories. Here's some of their meetings. They had help from E.T., and as well as other more deities, mythological, whatever. But we've got so much to learn from them to be able, it's existential for us.
Yeah.
And that's why I need to point all of this knowledge to help any way I can humanity in a proper direction, AKA tree of life, tree of knowledge, to maybe help us to recreate a moral fiber that I believe that we have lost completely. It's been severed. It exists, and that's the damning part of it, is that we know it exists.
Yeah.
We know it has existed, and yet we're ignoring it, and it's becoming more and more existential for us. So I'm hoping that through my studies and my discoveries of ancient civilizations and how they lived, how they thought, and the stories, lessons, information, and knowledge that what they left for us can help us to chart our course, not only in the present, but also moving forward. The book, it'll probably, my guess, Chris, I'm going to do a couple of research articles first.
Okay.
And then, because there's so much data going on here that, yeah. I think I'd like to do it that way, through the website, academia and whatnot. And eventually it'll get into being a book, but, yeah, I got a busy year with,
absolutely.
The two tours and, next week, as we speak, or when this is actually going to air, I will be in Egypt, but
that's
I'll
right.
Then back out in the Southwest. And then I start my lecture tour. If you get to July, 4th of July weekend, I'll be talking up a big storm that weekend at the Roswell Festival. So if you get a chance to stop in there, that is a hoot of a party.
Awesome. Yeah.
For the general public. It's way different from the typical ufology, conscious, life type of conference in that families are involved.
Yeah.
A lot more people actually go through, but, the museum does a really good job, as does the city of Roswell, with putting on that event. So I'll be doing three different lectures and a panel discussion. So
fantastic. I love it.
I invite you if you can get out there, but
I will do my best, my friend. I've been out we met at MUFONCon last year while I was sponsoring, and that is one of the many events that I have considered sponsoring. I've just got to look at my schedule and see if it's a fact that I can make it out there at the time. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a guaranteed good time. It's kind of their summer opening up celebration,
yeah.
But the whole city gets involved in the whole thing. So from there, and then I'll be talking this fall in Maryland Gambrels. Ron is scheduling it for possibly October, whatever. Mm. So I've had to sacrifice some speaking engagements with the tripping that I'm going to be doing. But,
yeah.
You got to take the opportunity when you can. So
that's right. On both counts.
Yeah. This is going to be knowledge acquisition for me for a while. So,
Godspeed.
And like I said,
the
website's under reconstruction. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so.
And, I want to thank you once again for always taking the time to come on, talk about these really, really deep topics, because if we aren't willing to explore the options, Keith, we're going to be stuck come the moment of decision. So books like yours, things like Humaniverse, the Humaniverse Guide, just fantastic noodle scratchers that really get you moving in the right direction for humanity. So.
Yeah, as individuals, as the groups that we belong to, as our societies,
yeah,
just hopefully in any way that maybe I can, let's learn from our past and apply what we've learned to help make our living and our lives better.
Absolutely.
Happier.
Absolutely.
Longer.
Well,
and we all just get along.
That's just it. That's it. Exactly. Well, while you are online checking out everything, please do hold the line while we close things out with the audience real quick, Keith. While you're online checking out everything from Keith Seelan and the Humaniverse Guide at thehumaniverse.org, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website where you can find all of our episodes. That is where you can find our Curious Realm store, complete with not only Keith's books, but books from all of our guests, all kinds of programs that they have created, classes, everything else. While you're on the website, you can also go to our newly recreated Curious Realm Videos Archive. That is where we archive the YouTube channels of all of our guests. There is Keith Seelan, the Humaniverse, right there, and all of his videos. It's a one-stop shop where you can go by and subscribe to all of our guests' YouTube content and watch them all right there. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that commercial break. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Podcast Cadet. For those of you out there trying to find a way to start your own podcast, to do what we're doing right here, full disclosure, I'm one of the owners of Podcast Cadet. We help people all the time start shows, brand shows, rebrand shows like we did with this one. Feel free to stop on by, check us out. PodcastCadet.com is the website. Curious20 is your code to get 20% off your entire cart. With us in this segment is our good friend, Dr. John Hall, author of Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, as well as a new breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. Those books are both available on the Curious Realm store, as well as Amazon. Welcome back to the show, Dr. John Hall. How are you?
Hey, Chris. It's great to be back with you. How have you been doing?
Oh, man, doing fantastic. I'd love to say I'm angry at the world or something like that, but I'm one of the most blessed individuals I know. So my life is fantastic. It's going great. All things are bumping and whirring, as it would say. And speaking of bumping and whirring, things have been going bump in the night in the world of Havana Syndrome as of late. As of March 30th, an article came out in The Hill. Havana Syndrome could be the result of electromagnetic weapon, according to a new declassified report. Oddly enough, that is what we have been saying since the days of Dudes and Beer. Like, this would literally be another Dudes and Beer called it moment if we still existed.
Yeah, because I remember when the news first broke of those attacks at the embassy, you know, they were blaming acoustic weapons. And I remember you and I talking, and I was on several other radio shows talking as well, saying, this isn't going to be acoustic. This is going to be microwave based or electromagnetic based weaponry that's doing it. And sure enough, that's where they eventually, at least the researchers that those diplomats went to, came to those conclusions.
Yeah, precisely. And once again, the story on Havana Syndrome, before it even had a name, was changed numerous times. The dialogue went from, you know, acoustic weapons to mass hallucination to crickets to the chemical used to get rid of the crickets and side effects. And, you know, I think once it moved out of Havana, that was pretty well debunked. Once we started seeing people in China being
well, and then
the
counter intel, then the counter intel started. You started seeing them hire the usual people with, you know, from Psychology Today and magazines like that were saying, well, that, you know, experts from Australia saying that this was classic, you know, group, you know, hallucinations and, you know, psychosis, group psychosis and things like that, you know, which you're right. Once it started popping up in China and NDC itself, then it got a little more difficult for them to call that. So then eventually, I mean, I know you brought up the report that just came out saying that it's, mm-hmm. you know, more than likely electromagnetic weapons. Well, the intel community also came out with a report about a month ago now, I guess, saying that all of this could be explained, you know, by normal things, anxiety, depression, you know, maybe interference with, you know, various other types of electromagnetic devices, but not actual attack, and certainly not attack from any other state entity. So, you know, they've gone out of their way to actually irritate these victims themselves, which is really kind of surprising. And I think what really surprises me is I don't think they were really counting on these physicians and researchers at University of Pennsylvania in coming to the conclusion that this was electromagnetic weapons. I think they were hoping that those people were going to come to no conclusion.
And that would just be because a prime example would be, I don't know, I'm sure quite a bit of my audience has seen it. I don't know if you have seen Better Call Saul, the follow-up to Breaking Bad, but one of the main characters in the beginning of the story arc is Jimmy McGill's brother, who has an allergy to radio frequencies. Like an allergy to electromagnetic fields, stuff like that. And people think he's crazy, you know, all that kind of stuff. But He can feel the vibrations coming off of cell phones and that kind of stuff. And once again, to try to put this down to mass hallucination with people, I think is, well, as the actual CIA agent who came down with Havana syndrome said, pretty insulting.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's several actual CIA agents that have come down with it, and diplomats that have come down with it, yeah, in here and in Canada. And the Canadians have gotten pretty much the same response from their government. And I mean, they're irritated. I mean, because here they all got, you know, looked at it, you know, the hospitals there in Florida when they first got here, and then they all got sent to UPenn for extensive evaluation. Here, the doctors actually found, you know, that there was something wrong in their brain scans. Mm. And then the government still said, no, you know, it's nothing. So,
well, and that was the point that I was bringing up about the TV show and the guy allergic to RF, is that finding that kind of evidence is hard. If you don't know what you're looking for, it's hard to come to that conclusion. You know, if you don't know that electromagnetic fields or things like that could cause that kind of damage, it would be hard to look or to consider it as a possibility for the scar tissue that these people had and the white tissue damage that these people had in their brains.
Well, and luckily for the diplomats that got attacked by this later on, there's been a whole group of people that have been experimented on with it in the United States and globally, you know, for a while. So, you know, there, it's not like there wasn't writing about this already in existence, you know, when these diplomats got attacked. So, at least there was some pointers out there to actually, you know, get some of them pointed in the right direction. You know, most of them had gag orders on them, you know, not only the researchers, but the victims themselves, and still do have gag orders, you know, on them. If you've noticed, 60 Minutes is about the only group that's been able to interview one of these victims successfully. And but at least they kind of knew the basics based on, I think based on the research that's been done with targeted individuals, they kind of knew where to start looking as far as electromagnetic weapons or microwave based weapons. And they kind of knew diagnostically what to look at in the MRIs, because it's, you know, when you're looking at white track matter damage, the only way to really diagnose it is through diffusion tensor imaging. It's a very specialized type of MRI that can pick up damage in the actual white matter tracts, the little tracts that attach neuron to neuron. So, and that is where you see the damage.
Yeah, in the actual meninges, between the convolutions of the brain.
Yep.
And I just brought up the article, of course, about the Chinese developed the crowd control gun that vibrates internal organs and eyes and brains and everything else. Like if you're dealing with the whole concept of radar came about, or the microwave rather, came about by accident with radar and somebody's corn on the cob, you know. They got too close to a radar dish and it started popping. Hence why the original name of it was the radar range, not the microwave. That's an example of the reverse way of weapons becoming regular technology. And now we have the fact of we're using this kind of technology regularly. You know, I'm using high order vibrations and millimeter waves to talk to you right now via a cell phone. You know, we're all putting it all right up next to our head and sleeping with it next to us every night.
And unfortunately, all the studies that are studying the detriment of that are funded by cell phone companies.
Yeah. They're all funded by Nextel and Samsung. Well, where do you see Because, I mean, of course, we've had you on numerous times talking about targeted individuals, targeting technology. I mean, one of the first times that we've been having you on since the story of Havana Syndrome broke. And since the first stories of diplomats being targeted by something but exhibiting these symptoms. So to have seen this whole story arc build and come to this culmination and to the point of it even having a name, where do you see it going from here, Doctor? Because, I mean, we've definitely seen over the last couple of years the path of a lot of conversations change. Last time we had you on, we were talking about intelligentsia worlds and, you know, UFOs, UAPs, and the conversation now with that and how it's changed. What do you think will come of this as far as targeting technologies, things like that?
Well, you know, like I've told people before, the amount of money that gets spent on the research on this, it's not going to go away. You know, my only hope is that maybe in my lifetime or not long after my lifetime, we'll have ethical people in government that will actually oversee it. There'll be some oversight, you know, sure, on how it's used, you know, but, you know, the problem is it's, you know, they've already leaked it into civilian hands.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't being strictly done. I know a lot of people think that this is being strictly done to them by the CIA or by the FBI. Or the NSA, and they certainly have people that have access to it. And
or world government organizations.
Yeah, they can go rogue and do their own thing. But, you know, they've also passed it down to the hands of, you know, big corporate private investigative companies or private investigative companies like I identified here in San Antonio that are comprised of, you know, former government and former FBI officials. So
yeah.
And then you don't know who they're allowing to access it, because it is still classified access to get, you know, to get the full complement of the weaponry, where you can put voices in somebody's head, where you can, you know, be psychologically detrimental to them, as well as have the weapon system on there for directed energy weapons to zap people with as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's not something you and I can just, you know, find an app and a website, yeah, you know, to do it to somebody. You have to be connected to get to it. And, but there are people in the regular civilian world now that can do it. So, you know, and it's like with any other technology, I mean, as time goes on and it becomes more commonplace, I mean, more and more people will have access to be able to hire it done to somebody, which is what we're seeing in Texas and have seen now for some time. I mean, if you've got the right amount of money, you can go to this or one or two other PI groups. And, you know, you're going through a divorce and you need to make your wife look crazy so she doesn't get the kids or doesn't get child support or doesn't get half of your belongings. You know, then they start targeting her and, you know, she starts going to the doctor and telling him she's hearing voices and that there's cameras in her house and microphones in her car. And, you know, nothing's ever found because it's not done that way, you know, and it's all done by, you know, a biolink, you know, with brainwaves. So it's, you know, nothing's ever found. And they, you draw the psychiatric illness designation or disease. And then the person that's hired it done has gotten away with almost a perfect crime. And which is exactly why they, you know, really weren't anticipating these doctors at UPenn to come around with the idea that maybe it was electromagnetic energy on these diplomatic victims. And we're hoping they would bite on some of these other theories. Like you said, they blamed crickets. My favorite was blaming permethrin.
Yeah.
Permethrin poison. You know, we've been using permethrin for about a century. You know, if permethrin was going to make you hear voices.
And the cricket noise thing ain't gone. I've got National Defense University Press up right now from first quarter, January 2023. Havana Syndrome, directed attacker, cricket noise. Like, seriously, they're still talking crickets.
Well, I wonder if that's the obviously that must be the same cricket that's in China.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. The same
in
cricket
Russia.
That's in D.C. and Russia and D.C.
In D.C. Yeah. Exactly. I think his name is Yankee Doodle.
And then permethrin has been used in pesticides now for quite some time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if permethrin was going to make you hear voices and think that you're being attacked, then, you know, there ought to be a ton of farmers that are hearing voices. And,
yeah,
you know, because I mean, you and I both kind of grew up in agricultural backgrounds. I mean, there wasn't.
I grew up in East Houston, man. I saw sprayers regularly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there wasn't a time in Mississippi that we weren't being doused by crop dusters with something.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's just it. To still be using that as a scapegoat, really, even as a point of conversation, the directed attacker cricket noise. Like, I guess you're referencing what started it all, you know,
but to get to your question, which is where are we going with it? Well, here's the problem I've had with going anywhere with it. When this came out, our own diplomats were being attacked and probably not being attacked by Russia. Like they were saying, Russians had no reason to attack diplomats in that embassy in Cuba. I mean, they've got listening devices in that embassy that were installed when that thing was built. They can hear every freaking thought in that building and have for some time. They had no reason to attack anybody.
Yeah.
More than likely, it was our own government attacking our own people. And they had plenty of reason to do that. But
what would those reasons be, Dr. Hall?
Well,
what most people would ask.
Well, you got to remember, at the time, you know, and even to this day, they're still trying to get Trump. Trump is a nightmare to the intel community because they tried to screw him with the whole Russia, you know, gate thing. And they know, and the Democratic Party knows that if he gets back in, he's going to come after the intelligence agency. So they needed to make it look like he was being soft on Russia, allowing them to attack the embassy in Cuba. Because remember, it was Trump that kind of put an end to, you know, lifting some of the Cuban embargo, I guess you could say. So, I mean, it was all in my mind, I think probably all a setup to try to get him. And because that is, if you're going to go for an impeachment, you need a high crimes and treason, and, you know, allowing American diplomats to be attacked by a foreign government as president would be treason enough for impeachment.
Yeah.
But I mean, unfortunately, I think it didn't happen as planned for them. And then they had researchers who said, well, you know, this looks like it's electromagnetic weapons. And, you know, then when people started finally realizing, well, it's probably not the Russians do it, and it's certainly not the Cubans doing it, well, then that only leaves a couple of other players that have access to that weaponry. And you know, most of them are within the Five Eyes. You know, Australia, us, you know, Great Britain and Canada, except for China. And nobody's going to blame anything on China because China finances our entire country.
Except balloons. So,
yeah, except balloons. Well, you know, and even that.
Balloon out there on China.
And even that, they could have shot that balloon down when it was over the Aleutians. They didn't. They let it go over the whole United States, surveying whatever it needed to survey before they finally shot it down.
Yeah. And
so,
you know, once again, the question I get from people more than anything, Dr. Hall, is why me? Why me? I got a voicemail from somebody all of a week ago that was contacting me and asking me about being a targeted individual and what they could do and what kind of help they can seek. How they can get a hold of you and Dr. Duncan, all kinds of things. And the biggest question that I hear from them is, why me? What did I do? You know, I'm not a 21-year-old leaker of Pentagon documents. Why are they coming after me?
Well, and that's the question that I've gotten for years. And if you look historically, that's exactly the people that you experiment on. I mean, you know, with you know, the early Monarch and MK Ultra and all of that, you know, They experimented on school children, on homeless people, on guys using prostitutes, especially drug addicts.
Prisoners.
Very popular. Yeah, prisoners. Prisoners and people that are addicted to drugs have no recourse. You know, I mean, because when you start screaming that you're being experimented on, it's all going to get blamed on the drug use. So, if it's a prisoner, then people are going to, if you hadn't committed a crime while in prison, then you wouldn't be getting experimented on. You know, so there's a lot of lack of remorse there for people.
You know who people believe all the time? Criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But because, Erlen, like we've talked about before, some of the earliest people I actually talked to in writing my books was prisoners from the Utah State Prison.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, that were very clear that said, I had the voices that were being beamed into my head, and those voices were responding appropriately to my thoughts. I mean, they knew, that was the case.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the technologies out there all, so many technologies are out there that can do that now. I mean, the Pentagon was looking at lasers that could put voices into people's heads. There's so much techno. Once again, we're all walking around with it. I mean, there was a ringtone all of a few years ago that anybody over a certain age couldn't hear, because your ear was just overdeveloped by that point. You know, like 80% of adults weren't able to hear the tone because by that point their ear had just lost those frequencies. So we operate in all kinds of frequencies all the time that can affect us in many, many different ways. And yes, there are people that are differently sensitive to that as well. And the more you bombard anybody with it, the more it will drive you to that point.
Well, and the other thing that kind of slowed us down on the fight against this, as far as its domestic use with targeted individuals, and I think you'll agree with me on this, the world's changing, and the world's changing quickly. And it's one of those things where when Havana Syndrome first came to light, I mean, I reached out to some of the people who are influential in the targeted individual world in the fight against this and said, man, this is our chance. We've got to grasp this. Because these are going to be people that, whether they want to be on our side or not, are going to wind up on our side.
Yep.
Because they didn't want this. No matter where it came from, they didn't want it, and they're going to realize how horrendous it is. Well, that's all good and well. They're sending them to the hospital. They're still, for the most part, ignoring us in the targeted individual world, but they are focusing on figuring out what it is with the government employees. Well, then they started kind of denying them their true justice, that's not good. Well, then the political unrest started to happen around the last election. Then there was riots in the street. And then there was, Black Lives Matter riots. And then there was the war in Ukraine. I mean, it's just been, and then there's China floating balloons over us. And, now there's, Iran and the Saudis forming their alliance. I mean, there's so much political upheaval to detract away from, anybody within the government that does, have the morals and the ethics to actually research this or look into this, now is being pulled into these other geopolitical circles, with stuff that's going on that's important to the world, and the things are changing fast.
They are changing entirely rapidly, and that's why I was asking what you see next, because the one thing that I think you are absolutely dead on right about is the one thing that a lot of people get very upset with you about, and that's that you say the answer is political. It is. Until we get a law that says that government entities cannot test on the American public, there will be gray areas. There will be opportunities for it to happen.
But and the reason I say that too, and is, again, I mean, you're into the electronics field. I mean, mm-hmm. you do binaural beats for me, which is one of the ways we figured out how to combat this.
Yep.
And for those of you that don't know, binaural beats through bone conduction hearing headphones does kind of help subvert their ability to mess with you, because it's at a similar frequency and it's being beamed into your head a similar way. And Chris is who formulates binaural beats for me for a lot of people who reach out to me, and does a great job with that.
Thank you.
But as far as developing shielding and things like that, very few of us are going to have the financial capability to do that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, let's say you do invent some type of anechoic suit that you can wear that completely blocks out. Well, then you're going to be basically demonstrating that you're possibly mentally ill by being the person who needs to be in this suit out in society every day. Eventually somebody's going to say, yeah, you don't need that suit. You need to be in a hospital.
Yeah.
And that's where you're going to end up. So, yeah. I mean, that's why the answers have to be political, but man, like I said, the geopolitical change is rapidly consuming our world. I mean, as a matter of fact, if you watch the news today, China's giving us direct threats now.
Oh, yeah.
Over protection of Taiwan.
But I also see that as the plus side, Doctor.
Yeah.
Because once again, I don't like the fact that there's now an annual UFO UAP report. That's an annual thing. That's like an NDAA. You know, that's like a State of the Union address. Like it's happening. We're going to get this every year. Now, the problem with that is that, yes, a new alphabet agency exists to oversee that. The plus side is that now the stigma of reporting is gone. There is now a unified process that if you're a Navy pilot and you land and you go, hey, Captain, I saw this thing in the air. They go, here you go. If you're an Army pilot and you say, hey, I saw this thing in the air, they give you the same, here you go. It's not a different process anymore. It's not a different process for the FAA than it is for the military. So what we've gotten is a unification of the data, which in and of itself will help distill things. Now, does that mean that that's also helping fund the alphabet agency? Yes. Like, it's kind of horrifying that the answer adds more obfuscation.
Oh, yeah. You're going to get all the answers we want you to have.
But they aren't going to declassify something or... declassify it, and even the word that I'm looking for, they aren't going to have the grand reveal on something that is not monetarily and militarily in their best interest. As I've held the whole time with the technology of UFOs, UAPs, not saying it's not reverse engineered, but it's more than likely our technology, and it's more than likely the fact of only way we're going to get funding for the next realm of technology is to finally admit that this one's real and start monetizing it and start making money off of it. Because you gotta make up the money from the Black Project somewhere. You know? And it's kind of the same thing with this. If it's the fact of getting everybody on board to at least pass something, so that there is oversight. Not saying that the technology doesn't exist. As they said numerous times in that first panel hearing with the Senate, with UFOs, UAPs. Hey, we'll discuss that in our closed-door meeting after this. We can't discuss that in the open meeting, but we'll discuss it in the closed-door secure meeting after this. But yes, your question will be addressed, you know? And being able to do the same thing with this, I think, is very important, because now we are at the point that they were with ATIP, that they were with UFOs, UAPs, things like that. Now we are at the point with Havana Syndrome and government employees being injured to say, you can't say it's not real anymore. You can't say hypersonic technology is not real and it's decades away and nobody's working on it like that when it's being used on a battlefield.
Yeah.
You know, the denial process of it is just gone now. And that's, I think, the same thing that's happening here, where we're basically just figuring out a way to tell everybody right now.
Well, it's like I said before, you know, it's like with the MK Ultra hearings and the Aker hearings when they did, you know, radiation testing over unsuspecting populations. Mm-hmm. In the past, it's been deny, deny, deny at about the 40 to 50 year mark. Same thing within Guatemalan yep. syphilis, you know, research. Then they'll march out, a State Department official. There'll be a minimal amount of survivors left over that were actually firsthand witnesses to the original experimentation. Mm-hmm. And those survivors will be offered an apology. Yes, we did it. It was in the best of, national security interest. Yeah. We're sorry. And, you know, here's maybe some reparations for the two or three people that are there that are still surviving that remember the original experimentation.
No different than the syphilis experiments at Tuskegee.
Yeah, and that typically was the way it was done. Well, but yeah. That is the one good thing about the internet. You know, the internet kind of came around where now, news travels pretty quickly, and what yeah. they term conspiracy theory, which anymore is conspiracy fact, travels just as quickly.
Yep.
So now they're finding out that it's a lot harder to tamp down these fires when you have a bunch of people that are accessing this, although they have learned how to control access to some knowledge on the internet pretty well.
Well, and, yeah. and
we found that we found that out in the last election.
Well, so. and not only that, you also have the known quantitative that they have already when it comes to the internet and filtering of information and the way that most people's cortisol levels go up when they read things. And if you're already a targeted individual, your cortisol's already up. So aggravating that and keeping it there is not hard once you're in it.
Well, you know? and I've noticed that they do know how to throttle down your exposure levels to certain topics, you know, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter,
because
I've noticed that on my own site where, if it's something that's relatively benign, I mean, it'll reach, several thousand people or whatever. But if it's something that's pretty poignant and they know that it's not something that needs to be out there, I'll look and I'll say, oh man, this article only got 2 likes, and 5 yeah. views. Well, there's a reason
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, way off your normal numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I laugh, but yeah. Absolutely. That is definitely a thing. And even when it comes to this and when it comes to this topic and this technology, the trying to explain to people, I have an easier time explaining alien technology to people, Dr. Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And them accepting it than I do them accepting the fact that somebody could put an idea in their head from a distance.
Yep.
You know,
yep. I've had the same thing. I've had people that sit and talk to me and have no problems believing yep. in Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, and space aliens. But you say, well, there could be a guy up at the NSA sitting behind this computer actually controlling the brain of this person.
Crazy,
and they go,
bird.
No,
crazy
no
bird.
Way.
Yeah. Get out of here, crazy bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. Like of anything, I've probably got more patents related to this and this technology on my knowledge vault than anything else. When it comes to influence at a distance, things like that. And we recently had Dr. Duncan on, talking about such things and especially talking about the deep extreme means of control. Once you're inside of that hormonal loop in your body. It can be hard to pull somebody out of that. I mean, that's what makes somebody leaving drug addiction so hard, is leaving that hormonal loop of satisfaction, you know? And your brain's no different, and it'll feed off panic the same way. And I the example I gave was somebody who came to me that wanted to start a show to share their voice, you know, things like that. And I was like, I don't know that I would necessarily advise that. I would say maybe start up a community website, you know, where you can provide some information to families. Like if you feel yourself moved to do something for the community, do that. You know, start up an informational website where maybe you can blog about your experience for those that are experiencing, and then you can provide resources for those whose families don't know what's going on. You know, but I was like, I would tend to think that Dr. Hall and Dr. Duncan would agree with me that doing a show for multiple hours a week and preparing for that and getting ready for that would literally just be subjecting yourself to the mentality that they're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, and making you an easier target because you're letting it rent the spare space in your brain more than you should, you know? And it's hard. It's hard for us in this society not to put ourselves in, and I hate using the terminology, but it's true, a victim mindset. That is what this technology feeds off of, quite literally. Not even the technology of the brain of the offender, but the literal technology.
And that's what I've gone into depth with a lot of victims that contact me, that, you know, because I mean, their first question almost always is, you know, there's got to be a way to make this stop. You've got to make it stop. You know, and I tell them, I said, you know what, this is your fight. And as hard as that is to look somebody in the eye and tell them that, it really is the best defense against this technology is to continue living your life, at least as best as you can, because there's not a silver bullet that's going to make it go away. You know, there's not a chant, you know, or a mojo or anything, or a pill that I can give you that makes it go away. I mean, it takes, you can escape it using binaural beats and using, you know, the technology with bone conduction hearing and other, you know, hypnotic type, you know, techniques.
Psychological grounding and reinforcement.
Yeah, but a lot of that work falls on the victim themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just about with anybody, you know, it comes down to you doing, you pulling your end as well. You could go out and, like you said, sure, I could build this room into an anechoic chamber, dude. Like, I've got the know-how. I don't have the money, but
yeah.
But yeah, like if I wanted to RF proof this room, totally. I could throw up some copper sheeting and stuff like that, and copper mesh, and make it happen. It would cost commas and zeros to make that happen. But I've got to leave the room at some time.
Yeah, and we've done that. And just in case there's people that are wondering, would that work? It does.
Yeah.
We took a group of, you know, targeted individuals to Belgium and put them in a research grade anechoic chamber, and they didn't feel a thing. They didn't hear a thing. They were perfectly fine. You can't live in one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know,
you got to go out and use the bathroom, get supplies, cook, you know, life goes on. And much like any terrorist out there, you know, that we learned at 9/11. Living in fear and living huddled in your home is what they want. That's what gives them their power.
And for those of the people that are listening to this and talking about, oh, these guys are talking about how, you know, the government wants to control you. Well, the people at Davos that do want a one world economy and a one world government have their own economist. And he's already said, you know, once AI, we were talking about AI earlier, automation steals jobs from the lower end of the job spectrum. AI steals jobs from the upper end of the job spectrum. The trade jobs are about the only ones that are safe, that can't be done robotically, you know, or through automation. But service industry jobs can be handled with automation.
Yep.
And doctors and lawyers can be replaced with AI. But the economist, that Israeli economist that works with the group up at Davos, has even said, what will we do with the worthless part of the population that gets replaced by AI? And their answer for that is to keep them addicted to drugs and addicted to sports. So that's coming directly from, you know, the wealthy folks up at Davos that are actually the proponents of a one world economy and a one world government. And their answer for those of you that'll end up without jobs, or those of us that'll end up without jobs, is to occupy our times with addiction. So
yeah, it's been the next to religion, been the opium of the masses since the before the time of ancient Rome. Give them the games, you know, and they'll follow you. So yeah, it's always about the distraction of the day, you know, whether it's Chinese balloons like we talked about before, what have you, Dr. Hall. It's a constant game of prestidigitation, not only technologically but politically.
Well, just like, you know, we've talked about before, we're getting pretty close to where the only one left to impress us with is going to be the alien invasion.
Yep. I'm biting my tongue because I don't.
I know. And I'm sure you
guys know where I stand on it. So does my audience. I'm pretty positive that Project Bluebeam is alive and well right now. Right now. And like, and years ago, man, like I was still in the dudes and beer days, Doc. It was shortly after I contacted you and had you on the first time, as I was making my LinkedIn game stronger, I connected with a gentleman that was pretty well connected in the UFO community, started a lot of UFO media stuff that was out there, like progeneratively, you know, was really one of the first conduits that kind of stuff regularly came out from. And I invited him to come on the show and talk about his body of work. He's like, I'd love to. I went and I listened to your show, and the guests are cool, you know, but I don't talk about these things publicly anymore. It's too much of a threat to my family and my friends. And he proceeded to basically lay out the fact that he believed Project Bluebeam was alive and well, and that they were getting ready to use technologies to fake an invasion to activate the religious right across the globe to enact a one world government for control. And that was the first time that I ever really like heard it laid out in more than one facet of the concept of Project Bluebeam. I'd heard it alluded to, and believe me, I've searched and searched and searched and searched and searched. There's nothing I can add in my knowledge vault. There's no PDF. Let me put it that way.
Well, and the other
I'm
thing too,
document sites, everything.
Well, and I know there's a lot of listeners that are ardent UFO believers, and believing the fact that Operation Bluebeam exists doesn't detract away from you believing that aliens exist.
It's like saying that, aliens exist subtracts from Jesus existing.
Yeah. It would be silly to think that there's not life on, you know, in other solar systems around us, you know. So, but it would also be silly to think that a government agency is not going to take advantage of that belief.
That's right. That they haven't metriced it out at the least, you know. And that, I mean, that goes all the way back to the
Orson Welles.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, even back to the before the Condon report, you know, whenever you start going through and looking at all kinds of the Brookings Institute. That's what I was looking for. The Brookings Institute report from before the Apollo program, before Mercury, really, where they said, yeah, if here's all the possibilities of space travel. And I mean, they laid out global communication instantly. They laid out television, all kinds of stuff. And the question came up, what do we do if we find intelligence beyond here? And Brookings basically said, we'd recommend that you just not tell anybody. That would probably be some humanity ending stuff.
Yeah.
Like society would rend itself apart. And granted, I think our society's enlightened in a different way than it was in like 1942, whenever that happened, whenever that study occurred. But the fact is the study happened, you know, and they looked at it, and that was the recommendation that came out of it, was I wouldn't tell anybody. So that's pretty remarkable to think that perfectly willing to keep the secret and not tell anybody about it. And I think it's pretty much the same way here with this technology. Once again, until it becomes the fact of it is beneficial to them, either militarily or monetarily, I don't think that we will see legislation. Sadly. Because we'll still be up against the same burdens that these doctors in UPenn were, where fortunately enough people knew how to identify this, knew the means by which to look in a new way for damage in the brain, to be able to come up with a consensus. You know? That I don't think that would happen at every university hospital.
No, but they also found out really quickly that, you know, even though they came up with a consensus, that when you hand the government, who asked you to come up with a consensus?
Yeah.
That answer. And then you get told back, no, we don't agree with that. We think it's all, you know, all can be explained by natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
So, you know, they actually, I'm sure, questioned that response when they came up with their findings.
Yeah. Well, and once again, it's a hard topic to talk about. It hurts me to talk about it. It really does. And it hurts me inside every time that I talk to a targeted individual, which is at least every other month. I hear from one. I get a message from one. I get a message from one on Facebook, from one of the communities, something like that. And it just breaks my heart, the torture and torment that these people live in, so frequently without the support of family, friends, because it's so hard to prove. So I want to thank you always for coming on the show, talking about this, being the beacon that you are to these communities, Doctor, because believe me, they are clamoring to find you. They are. And it's kind of scary to know that there are that many out there that are clamoring to find you. So before we let you go, of course, where can people go other than our store to pick up their copy of Guinea Pigs, Technologies of Control, or A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America? Specifically, if you have a family member that claims to be targeted or have V2K technology being used on them, things like that, you need to go get one of these books, people. Believe me. Let them know where they can go, Doctor.
Amazon, Barnes and Noble's online, and then of course, hopefully here around the corner, I've got my third book coming out. It's awesome. Called the fourth Branch. So, but yeah, I mean, especially guinea pigs. That book, if you have a family member and you're on the fence and you're thinking either my son or my daughter or my wife or husband has gone crazy or there's something really going on with them, read Guinea Pigs, because I mean, I've been around enough people close to me that I know for a fact were targeted that, you know, weren't mentally ill, and have talked to thousands and thousands of TIs. You know, it's all done with a pretty common script. And once you read that book and you go, well, this is exactly the stepwise process that happened with my loved one, then that ought to tell you right there that, you know, they didn't just overnight become crazy. Yeah. You know, they're probably being experimented on. So,
yeah. Well, once again, thank you always for coming on the show whenever we call. I love our conversations, both privately and on air. Always revelatory. Always so meaningful. So thank you so much for the time. Please do hold the line while we close things out real quick on the show. While you are online checking out all the amazing work of Dr. John Hall, make sure to stop on by the Curious Realm store, curiousrealm.com/store is where you can go to find all of the books from our guests here on the show. You can also stop on by and visit curiousrealm.com/story. If you are a targeted individual, a TI, if you're an experiencer of the paranormal, a sighter of cryptids or UFOs, UAPs, stop on by curiousrealm.com/story. Share your story with us. You can even share your pictures, audio, video, everything else. We will present your case to our professionals and hopefully get you some answers. Once again, that is curiousrealm.com/story, or you can call our experiencer hotline 512-298-3913 and leave a message. Once again, everybody, thank you so much as always for tuning in. It's always great to have the family here on a Tuesday night talking about these deep things, having these deep conversations, changing humanity as we know it. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, curiousrealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.